Where I am going, you cannot come. Last summer, the community theater called On the Isle on Nantucket invited us into a wonderful story that is called A Trip to Bountiful. In the movie version, Geraldine Page won an Oscar for Best Actress in 1985. And in the Broadway production, Cicely Tyson won a Tony Award in 2013. You may know the story. It's a story about the longing for home. It is about our yearning for a place of comfort and security and stability, a place of deep acceptance and unconditional love, a place where we can be ourselves, a place and a people that feed our souls. The movie is, it seems to me, a metaphor for a big chunk of our spiritual journeys. Carrie, who is played by Geraldine Page and then Cicely Tyson, is old and in failing health. She's dependent on her rather unhappy son and her rather selfish daughter-in-law for a place to live. Stuck now in a big city in Texas where she doesn't know anyone. Everything would be fine, she thinks, if she could just get home. If she could be happy there. She could die happy if she could travel there. If she could just go home to that simple wood-framed house where she grew up, where she was loved, where she was taken care of and where she took care of, where life was simple. At least that's how she remembers it. And so Carrie escapes her son's so-called home, and she sets out for Bountiful, her hometown. The first hint that Carrie's destination will disappoint her comes at the very beginning of her trip, when she goes to the bus station, practically bursting with joy and pride and excitement. She marches up to the ticket window and says, "I would like a ticket to Bountiful." Not missing a beat. The man behind the counter says, matter-of-factly, "I can get you to Harrison, I can get you to Cotton, but there is no Bountiful. There is no Bountiful." This is when it becomes clear that Carrie's journey, like our journeys, will be more about creating, sustaining, and dwelling in our own sense of home than returning to the near-mythical homes of our childhood or finding the dream homes of our adulthood, somehow changing it all up for what might have been or what might be or what is not the journey. In today's gospel, we are taken back to Maundy Thursday, the Last Supper. Jesus is preparing his disciples for his departure. We are invited to wash ourselves back in memory. Jesus has washed the disciples' feet by now and said, "Later you will understand what I am doing." Peter has struggled with this image, this washing. Judas has left to shape his betraying plan and moisten his kiss. And then comes today's gospel. The Father is being glorified in the Son, we are told. In Jesus' flesh, the whole of God is looking out upon us, guiding us. Now, Judaism has taught that we are to love our neighbors as ourselves. Yet this seems partial, semi-guided, it seems, to Jesus. Not enough, not guide enough. "I give you a new commandment," he says, "that you love one another." Got that. "Just as I have loved you, you should love one another." working at that, perhaps. By this, everyone will know that you are my disciples if you have love for one another. Certainly, we work at that. All that Jesus has taught them is referred to in the phrase, as I have loved you. And the you refers not just to the disciples in the room, but to those who are not in the room, to you and to me, to the people that Jesus has met along the way, the woman by the well, another caught in adultery, Zacchaeus in his tree and at his table, hoping to find a better life lived forward, Nicodemus, who comes to Jesus by night, hoping, searching for spiritual home, but fearful. There is the child healed at her bedside, Lazarus raised from the dead. There's Mary and Martha in their familial debate about what is primary. Is it better to do? Is it better to be? Is it some rhythm caught in between? The list is all but endless, these stories, and the insights are all but endless that they offer. We see this struggle lived out, this struggle for insight, in the book of Acts today. Peter has found himself the leader of the Jerusalem Jesus community. There's no reason for this community to be less than observant Jews. But the added layer of accepting that the Messiah has come in Jesus. Their rules that they have always followed, they have kept them distinct in their culture, clear, godly. In some way, they taste the cost of this purity and it satisfies them. It's home. It's a spiritual home for them. And yet they are troubled by the new Gentile converts who do not observe all that has shaped Jewish practice and spirituality. Peter has sought to reach out to these Gentiles, searching for a spiritual home. He does so to honor the apparent faith growth that is among them. He struggles within, and that spiritual struggle blossoms into this trance-like state into which he goes. In the dreamlike moment, he finds something that is not simply about food to eat or not to eat. It is much more about how Peter is to now love. How this nascent church, maybe this parish, is to love. Will it be as I loved you? And how will that look? Is it not about seeing past what comforts us to what comforts others? Or what hinders others? Is it not about what makes home for others? In the dream, all that is profane, all that Jews will not eat by dietary law, and perhaps for their health, everything that is forbidden in animal life is set before Peter to eat. Get up, Peter, kill and eat. But he will not. Then comes the key phrase. What God has made clean, you must not call profane. And we are told this happens three times. What's being called profane here? Is it the food? Or is it the Gentiles? The dream message is then confirmed not merely in Peter's head, but by the arrival of three men who invite him to go off with them to the Gentiles in a nearby town where he will share the message of Christ's love, wisdom, and care. And when he goes to share it there, He sees their hunger for God, for home. He watches as they open their hunger to faith and as they sight home, as they arrive there. And the gifts of the Spirit of God become alive in them, just as they have been among the disciples. He takes their hunger for God back to the Jerusalem church and says essentially, for the love of Christ, this is all you can measure. Our hunger, our desire for an eternal identity, for home, opening to God, that is all that matters here. I don't really get the world right now. It seems to me we're choosing to be incessantly hostile. It is as if we or so many are seeking things to make us angry. We look out with an angry eye too often, and we find a place for it to rest too easily. If you want to see Jesus, if you want to love like Jesus, look for who is trying to find home and rest your eye there. Pull alongside them. Listen to their journey. And when it's time, share your own longing, your story of finding home in Jesus. That is what orients our life. Bountiful for the aging Carrie Watts is not just her childhood home. It's a place of kindness, of love recalled, lived into, a place of lovely usefulness, even forgiveness. It is a bounty of kindness that awakens as she journeys there. For everyone she meets along the way shows her what she longs for. She hums a hymn as she journeys there. Softly and tenderly, Jesus is calling, calling for you and for me. See on the portals, he's watching and waiting, waiting for you and for me. Come home. Come home. You who are weary, come home. Earnestly, tenderly, Jesus is calling. Calling, O sinner, come home. And as she travels to Bountiful, she finds this home rest on many that she meets along the way. The gospel of Jesus is all about love. It's all about this quality that settles on us, that rises inside us, that we feed on at this altar. But it doesn't just descend. It comes from within, from a store place that God has created within us. And so it is that story by story and step by step and piece by piece, it sets out to remake each and every one of us. And through us, the world that we occupy. The work of this parish is all about helping us to see that mission. I'm thinking of the way we teach children this very core value, of what we teach them in preschool chapel, what we teach them in Sunday school, and particularly by their little outreach ministries, that they are loved, that they come from love, that they have a capacity to love, and that in listening to the stories, they will learn the way of love, that they will learn it most when they look to their peers and treat them out of that love. This is a massive thing for little children to learn, but it's not really massive at all. It's all about their being seen, and their seeing, and their touching, and their being known, that they are loved and filled with this divine capacity to offer themselves outward into the world in service. I'm thinking about the Care and Share ministry, which is parishioner to parishioner, caring in times of transition and illness and need. I'm thinking about our new refugee ministry, where we choose care over fear. I'm thinking of what it is for us to choose to house and feed and clothe, either close at home or off in Appalachia, refugees, Habitat for Humanity, the weeks spent building people's home in regions of poverty, or the distant places that Episcopal Relief and Development sends our funds and our skills and our knowledge. There is a place called Bountiful, and it is in the heart and mind of each one of us. It is in Jesus. It is in you, and it is in me. Softly and tenderly, Jesus is calling for you and for me. See on the portals, he's watching and waiting, watching for you and for me. Come home. Come home.